color is the foundation of great design. It can settle a building into its landscape. It can make an unattractive structural detail just disappear, and it can change your mood in a room instantly. Welcome to Let's Talk Color. I'm Amy Crane, architectural color consultant at Amy Crane Color. I'm a color expert and use color to transform spaces and products from the ordinary to the sublime. As a paint color specialist, realtor, and design writer, I've got my finger on the pulse of what's happening in the world of color. In each episode, I'll reveal best practices for choosing color by introducing you to masters of color for the built world. So throw out those paint chips, tape to your walls, and let's get started. When we launched this podcast in 2021, Kitchen Color was one of the first episodes my then co-host and I created. It's still one of the most downloaded episodes of all time. The kitchen is such a major player in the successful design and function of our homes. I've been planning to do an update on kitchen color for this year, and to that end, my guest today is the perfect person to speak with. Sophie Donaldson is a design journalist, speaker, and strategist whose work celebrates the connection between people and their homes. Previously editor-in-chief of House Beautiful magazine, Sophie has written for dozens of blue-chip publications and authored several books, including 2023's Uncommon Kitchens, A Revolutionary Approach to the Most Popular Room in the House. She's currently the lead expert on the Magnolia Network show Design Defined. I love that show. I've seen them all. And when not traveling to design industry events, she works from her home in Montreal. Welcome, Sophie.
Amy, thank you so much. So happy to be here.
Our timing is perfect because you recently came back from KBIS, where I think you were a speaker. And for anyone who doesn't know, that's North America's largest trade show dedicated to kitchen and bath design. So what did you see? What's new? What's interesting? Is it all the same as last year?
No, it's never the same. And it's funny, you know, sometimes innovation in kitchen design is hard to show, but color isn't. So color sort of, you know, can take a lead when you're looking at trends, even though there's, I don't know, something cool happening with, you know, convection, which is a little bit less sexy to talk about. Yellow, like a real canary yellow, egg yolk yellow, was something that I saw on ranges and outdoor grills, which was pretty interesting. And then there were just really riotous displays of color. I would say that I looked at the GE, their Cafe line of appliances. It just goes by Cafe. It was part of the GE family of brands alongside Monogram, had the wonderful designer Isabella Ladd, who is just exuberant and obsessed with color and had an absolutely riotous kitchen where they said that she was just allowed to, you know, do anything. And it was cheerful and wild. And I'm sure a lot of people walked by and said, what in the world? Or I would never, but it's sort of not the point. The point is to open your mind and take a look at, you know, what's out there and what's possible and how does it make you feel when you see all that?
It must have made you feel happy.
I was pretty blown away. It was really, I was happy it existed. You know, I'm always happy to show that. And then, yeah, just beautiful to see people having fun and showing. I mean, at a trade show, you have to kind of bring something that turns heads, and it's different than what we might want to live with every day. And both are okay.
Yeah, absolutely. Design Defined. It's a tongue twister to say, I have to tell you. I don't know if it rolls off your tongue, but it doesn't roll off mine.
I did a lot of takes with that.
Yeah. You know, when HGTV started all those years ago, I just couldn't get into them. You know, it's my field, but I couldn't. And I come from a background in TV production anyway. So I wasn't thrilled with the production value. Too many of same, same, all of that. And I have to say that when Magnolia Network came on the scene, I think they do a really spectacular job showcasing those kind of shows. So you're a lead designer on it, a lead expert, I should say, on it. How is it different from all the other shows in your mind?
This is a cool show. The premise of it is to take an architectural or design style such as, you know, mid-century modern or even Art Deco or, you know, maybe broadly Southern style and explore what it is, where the origins, you know, came from, what are the materials that are used to get that style, you know, what is the nuance? What does it mean? And how do you do it? How do you do it for yourself? And so it's this really a cool lens, a really educational show with what I would say, as we know in the industry, B-roll. So B-roll is the images that play behind somebody like me talking. So I joke and say, like, you know, feed the people what they want, which is these beautiful images and delight, you know, people with the eyes. And then they're going to listen. They're going to listen to the history behind something. And there was one on sort of like rustic or like cabin style. And it was just unbelievable. There's obviously a great genre out there right now celebrating that style. And it's come more to light with websites like, and books like Cabin Porn, which was really, you know, popular. And, but you know, the fact that it came after this time where the trains of America were taking people out west and the national park system was building these lodges and people would vacation like this, which is often where people get ideas and then come back to their own home and say, I want this in the Adirondacks or I want this in the Pacific Northwest. And yeah, started homesteading with these like log cabin homes, which of course have a great history in Europe and in Scandinavia. So I learned so much. The producers were incredible and, yeah, did an amazing amount of homework for me. And then I was able to add my own point of view to that. I think you're right about Magnolia, that part of it, this is the streaming. You know, streaming allows for many, many more shows and for shorter shows, and they're not as dependent on the same ad format. And so more is being brought to light. There's a greater diversity of programming. And it's really interesting and in stark contrast to what's happening in print publications, maybe. So these things, you know, they're never static. And there's some forms of media that are just going to come to light because we have the technology for it. So, you know, podcasting, now we can do this from our bedrooms in our own home. And so we see more of that. And streaming has changed the format instead of linear TV to that, although it plays on both. It plays on traditional TV as well.
Let's talk about your book, Uncommon Kitchens. It's so unique in so many ways. The kitchens we see in the book are completely atypical. The people you interviewed and whose kitchens were in it were homeowners, were designers who showed their own kitchens, were people from different walks of life and different professions, and they offered very individual points of view. I told you when I spoke before, what one thing I loved about the book was how contradictory many people were. I mean, why not show that? That's, if anything, that's almost the point of your book. Have your own personal point of view and go with it and don't, you know, don't go for the uniform idea. It was conversational. It was witty. I laughed a few times, which is great. I mean, there were so many memorable quotes, great metaphors, points of view, and helpful tips for everyone. Lastly, I want to say that it showed so many kitchens from my region, upstate New York / Hudson Valley, that I said, yay, because we have such a treasure trove of great homes here. So who's it for?
Well, it's for homeowner and design professional, undoubtedly. I mean, that said, it's for anyone who's lucky enough to have a kitchen. I mean, truly. The wisdom that I was looking for in this isn't just about individuality, but about freeing ourselves from this room that's gotten unnecessarily challenging, I think, for a lot of people, whether you are renovating and you're, or building from scratch and you've saved or you put in the, you're ready to sort of, you know, spend and do it and go for it. Or people that are in a kitchen that they've had for a lot of years and maybe feel fine about, but could probably use something that lifts their spirits, or somebody that's really wrestling with their space and is like, God, I wish I could gut this and that maybe I can't right now, or I'm going to, and I don't know how. Or me, like a kitchen that constantly evolves and I'm always looking for ways to tinker with it. The point of it was really that I felt that we have represented very clearly these sort of what I call PWKs, perfect white kitchens, that we've got this down. And you know, listen, a lot of them are beautiful and there's designers and homeowners that do them incredibly well. And I also say that any kitchen that you spend time in, that if you have friends or family that you enjoy being in the kitchen that spend time with you, where you're making food and things are happening, is a great kitchen. Like that, just period. There's no right or wrong kitchen of that. If you're using it and enjoying it for the most part, mm-hmm. Great. It doesn't mean you don't need the book. Of course you need the book still, but that works. But it felt like there was this real pattern that had been perfected and partially because of the media that we've seen and partially because even though it feels expensive to sort of build and renovate, these materials and the breadth of what is offered is just light years from what it was even 5, 10, 20 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
So you can do a really, really good kitchen at IKEA. And they're good at it and they're beautiful. And they've got all the bells and whistles that you want. And by the way, that's not even the bottom of the barrel. There's cheaper, there's probably even cheaper ways to go because that's actually quite a, it's become a good kitchen. But that image of what that looks like with the, you know, Carrara marble and the white subway backsplash maybe. And
statement lighting.
The big hood and the much bigger island and the bar stools and kind of the white on white and that white on white aesthetic. There's a lot of places to go for that. Actually, probably so many that it's overwhelming. But what I didn't feel like was represented was like everything else and all of these kind of family kitchens and quirky individual, you know, individual people kitchens that are out there. They're just not, there wasn't a kind of a body of work that there was a place to go to say, I know the white one. What else you got? You know?
Right. Yeah.
And for that, it's like, it's not that the, you know, red and green one is meant for you, but maybe something that they did there, or maybe a point of view is going to open your mind and give you more options. Like that's really what it was, is that I feel like the kitchen has so much weight associated with it because the decisions are expensive and the materials are, you know, you really have to, you're picking through them, you're making a kind of a one-time decision, and that can start to feel super heavy and stressful. And yeah. I wanted to remind people that this is still a room, you know, there's a lot of ways to kind of address this that aren't just, it's going to have to be ripping out, you know, the counters or, you know, the cabinets or a gut.
How did you come up with these people and their kitchens? Did you know some of them? Did you see them on social media, recommended?
Yeah. So there were a handful of designers who I just thought were doing really good work that I reached out to. A handful of photographers that seemed to keep shooting really great kitchens, like Laura Joliet is one of them. And she shoots a lot for AD and she works with a lot of designers that I love, like Wreath Design, Stephen Kent Johnson, who shot the cover. There was just a handful of photographers that I think a lot of creative designers who are doing good kitchens turned to. So going to their portfolios and contacting them individually is one way. So maybe one shot ended up in a magazine, but they have 6 or 8 more that didn't, you know, and I wanted to put that body of work together. Definitely Instagram. Just, you know, enter that rabbit hole.
Yeah.
Go down and see. And then from there, I commissioned a lot of work. So maybe there was one shot of a kitchen, but that was it. So at least half the book is commissioned.
Wow.
So assigning the photographer. You have to get, I mean, typically when a designer is shooting for their portfolio or you're shooting for a magazine, you're getting no more than 1 to 3 images of a kitchen. And I needed about 12 to 15 to carry a chapter. So they don't come from nowhere. So that was a challenge with it. And it's also why, like, you know, what about uncommon bathrooms? I'm like, tough to find 12 great images, you know, of a bathroom, or you'd have to change the format and do something, you know, quite different. Instagram. And then, yeah, sometimes once a handful of people heard that I was writing it, people would shoot me a DM or an email or call me and say, what's up with this kitchen's book? And so I slipped a few in at the end.
For those who haven't seen the book yet, the cover shows a kitchen with a wood floor, white shaker cabinets, upper and lower, a red range, 3 different square backsplash color tiles, white, cornflower blue, and navy blue, a deep green work table playing the role of an island, and a lighter green kitchen table. Can you picture it? Probably not. Why this one for the cover?
So this was done by Rodman Primack, like R.P. Miller Design, and it felt like it represented so many of the ideas that I wanted to convey in one image. It was also quite striking and quite modern. Picking a cover is really hard, and in this book, impossible to represent what's inside. And I will say, Amy, like as a person that's interested in marketing and branding, this was a really big challenge. This is potentially a book that should have been written without images because the wisdom in it is very clear and quite universal. And once you see a color, an aesthetic, an image that you do or do not like, you have an immediate judgment and you stop listening. it's really challenging. If you can't see that design is filled with ideas and storytelling, mm-hmm. and the way we experience home is something that we carry in our heart and in our mind. We don't carry a flip book of images, you know, like we can talk about this and share ideas and nuance. Anyway, I find the limitation of images really, really frustrating because our experience of home is not to look at an image, it's to be inside a space. Back to the cover. This is a kitchen in a home that had really beautiful art and had certainly budget to spend. But the homeowners and the designers did what I would say is a light refresh. There are definitely some spendy parts. It's a beautiful Albertazzoni range that's red, but it's not a, you know, 36 or a 72 inch range. You know, it's a right sized range for the space. The lights are custom. There's a couple kind of telltale signs of fine design in there, but they're also, you know, the existing cabinets which are a bit imperfect. They're touching the frame of the window, which is kind of unconventional and I would say probably frowned upon in design. The framework of the kitchen is not so different than a lot of kitchens that some of us live in. And to kind of distract and entertain the eye, a bunch of punchy color was chosen to move your eye around the space. And then the work table, you know, an island, but petite. You know, we say work table when sometimes it's on legs, so it's not flush to the floor, and mm-hmm. it has often like a wood or a butcher block countertop, so it's not kind of that stone and that monolith that sits in the floor and feels really immovable. A lot of work tables can and are moved. And then what butts up to it is a drop leaf table, like a lot of us probably grew up with, where you put the sides up when you need to fit, you know, more people, and they go down when you need a more petite profile. And that's pushed up against there. And why is that? Because the house is, you know, just a couple sometimes, and sometimes they grow with their family when kids are home and they need more space. And so these things are kind of pushed together. But ultimately, this is kitchen furniture. These are things that can be moved around, change from room to room, emptied out of it if you want to, you know, change the function of the space. And what it shows is really flexibility, looseness, flexibility, and playfulness. And that I think is just missing. It's just missing when everything you choose is going to be built in, where, yeah, like I said, the weight of choosing whatever the backsplash color is like, well, that's what you're going to have and that's it forever. And it's like, God, you're not just staring at the backsplash alone. Like, there's probably a bowl of fruit in front of it. You know, there's going to be humans and dogs moving in and out of the space. Like, these are very lively rooms, and they just don't have to feel so stricken by design decisions.
Wow, that's so well said. I mean, you've actually, I think, covered in what you just said the four principles that you laid out for a great personal kitchen. And that's what I was going to talk about next, but you just naturally went there. So the first of them is employ color and pattern. Boy, do I agree with you.
Well, I'd love to hear your take on that, because that to me is really just to say, we do this in the other rooms in the house. There is no reason why the kitchen should be exempt from this. It's like, I always say there's homes you go through all the time, and you visit a friend and they have interesting art and, you know, collectibles and, you know, rooms that have, you know, chosen paint colors. And then you get to the kitchen, it's like the record stops and it's more anesthetized and void of maybe not personality, but just the playfulness, the movement, the interest that other rooms have. And it's like, it's just to me, I'm like, we're not all making kind of like, you know, jarring jams and making like a professional bakery in here. Like, it doesn't need to be a commercial kind of style workspace. Most people, honestly, like in their kitchen, they spend a lot of time scrolling their phone, calling friends, paying bills, sitting and having coffee. The room has so many other functions that to strip it of that and just make it like, well, it has to be clean and it has to work. I'm like, yeah, but a lot of things are clean and can work. Like, you know, having art on the wall is not going to keep it from being clean or working. I promise.
Yeah. You know? Yeah. I think, you know, for me, it's people get scared. Fear, unfortunately, drives so many decisions. And if you couple that with resale, I would never have red cabinets or pink cabinets or all the kind of colors I am starting to see trickle into the zeitgeist, my favorite being ochre, you know, an ochre yellow. You know, fear of resale value and just the cost of it. People seem to treat their choices differently. And I think it's really a lost opportunity because I agree with everything you have to say.
You can choose the wrong ochre, but you can also choose the wrong gray. You know, like the funny thing is, it's like there's no non-choice. Like white or pale gray is not a choice. It's not like, oh, there's a blank sheet of paper and then there's things on it. It's like you're making a choice every time you choose anything. Two, you don't have to renovate. You do not have to gut your kitchen. You don't have to renovate it. Like you literally don't have to. If things are working pretty well and you can come up with ideas that distract the eye, that where you say, yes, we're going to do the counters because I literally cannot live another day with these disgusting counters, do the counters. But you don't also have to do the backsplash. You do not have to do the floor at the same time. You do not have to find new appliances and they don't have to match. You can get a new refrigerator without getting a new range. Like this does not have to be all or never in the history of the world did somebody 50 years ago say, well, we're gutting the kit. Like that wasn't even a thing. And it wasn't a thing until these forces of the market, which were like, you know, Zillow putting Zestimates on our houses, where all of a sudden we were assigning a monetary value to aesthetic and personal choices. We were talking about resale in homes that we were never going to resell.
Good point.
It was never, you know, and it's okay to make incremental changes because there's so many joyful ways to update a kitchen, which we will get to. And one of them is color. And it doesn't have to be your counter or your cabinets. Like you can bring in beautifully colored tea towels. You can make a point of having great fruit, you know, or flowers, you know, always on your counter. If the counter is a sea of, you know, white stone or maybe gross formica that you don't want to look at, like show us something you want to look at, right? You don't have to change the thing itself. It's like you have to change your gaze.
Yeah.
And you have to change your relationship with the kitchen where you start to appreciate the joyful parts or I don't know. I just put, okay, it was a really labor intensive project, but on my utensil drawer, which is open and shut 500 times a day, I put bright red, like fire engine red contact paper, like 1980s contact paper on the inside. And so it's just a, like more cheerful instead of looking at the crumbs and the mess. It's like, it gives you this pop of color when you open the drawer and it's a drawer that we open all the time. And it was, you know, the project took an hour and honestly, I'm not going to do the other ones. It was too hard to do the other ones, but that's the drawer that opens a lot, you know, and that's color in the kitchen. You know, it just.
Your kitchen cabinets, am I not correct? It's in the book and they're sort of a burgundy cranberry.
Yeah, they are oxblood. That is admittedly my old home and I am in a very different home now. And I know, interesting, but that they were oxblood and they're beautiful. And
yeah, absolutely. I mean, one of the things 30 years ago, possibly, I visited some friends in the Cotswolds in England. It might have been the first English country house I had been to. The house was old, of course. The gardens were beautiful, you know, of course. Fields of daffodils, like. And I walked into this homey old kitchen that had really worn surfaces that might have had a stone floor. Don't even remember the color. I mean, I was a TV commercial producer then. This is 30 years ago. And there in the corner of one counter was a small table lamp. It blew my mind. I know that's so silly. That sounds so silly. It was like a table lamp, not overhead lighting. It was way before the pendant light thing. And I was like, oh, you know, I'd hit my head if it wouldn't mess up our sound here. It was a light bulb for me. And ever since then, I have had small lamps in my kitchen because it brings so much warmth. I'm not talking about the quality of the light. Into the room. It's a piece of furniture. Even if you're not lucky enough, and this might surprise people, I say lucky enough to have an unfitted kitchen because I moved into a 15, 20 year old house when I bought this house, you know, built in 2002. It was a maple built in row of upper and lower cabinets, whatever. And I've done what you've done. I've just said, oh God, counters, I'll change them. Backsplash, I change them. Same cabinets. And a little lamp with an adorable fabric shade, which I had made by someone on Etsy, gave her the fabric and said, make it. I mean, brings so much personality to a room.
No, it's a revolution, and it's, you know, it's so easy to do. It's like you know, anybody listening to this right now could probably find some forlorn little lamp in their house. Like, I move lamps all the time. Lamps are amazing. Designers love lamps for that reason. They're little sculptures, you know, they're really easy to get at vintage shops. They're cheap to have rewired, which I recommend. I swap them out all the time. I just moved one from my son's room that was like a little dinky little bedside one. It took up less space than the cool vintage one I had on my kitchen counter. And the cheerfulness of having lighting there, there's a lot of design reasons why that works, but it's just a good example to remind you that this is still a room. And I take issue with the idea that everyone is, you know, deep frying, you know, tempura or fried chicken every night of the week. And there's going to be some layer of grease or film that's going to cover everything. It's like, no, you're not.
Yeah.
You're not doing that. It's not that. Don't talk to me about how your kitchen needs to have wear and tear. You have a family and it needs to kind of take beating. It's like, are kids today super different than the ones 30, 50 years ago? Like, no. Like, there's the same level of kind of destruction or decay. You know, it's, you can still just wash your walls with it. You know, now we have magic eraser. They didn't used to have magic eraser. So, you know, let go of the fallacy that somehow this kitchen needs to be, you know, bulletproof. It's like, it can take a little beating and be beautiful and be enjoyable and should, because that means that people are using it. But anyway, point being, yes, hanging art, adding, you know, an indoor out, we have indoor outdoor rugs now, which mean you can throw them in the wash or even just like get them outside and, you know, spot clean, or, you know, there's a lot of ways to take care of them. They also just don't get that dirty. I don't know to add a runner in the kitchen is so cheerful. And this is the fun thing about having ugly cabinets, which I admit to in my current home. A ton of us do. And they're expensive. And no matter what, you're like, you can just paint them. Like, you can, and it's hard, you know, or it's at least a little bit expensive and a little bit, you know, labor intensive. Avert your eye. Find a great rug, find a great lamp. You're going to walk in the space and you're not going to see the cabinets. You're going to go, oh, that lamp is so cheerful. I'm so happy. Or like, oh, my fern is doing really well, or it isn't doing well. Like, let's get some fresh flowers, or, you know, find the things that make you happy. It's like, it's just like dressing, right? It's like, you know, we get older and we come up with statement glasses because you don't want to look at our, you know, eye wrinkles or something, or, you know, a great red lip, or a cool necklace, or just a beautiful color that's like, wow, that's a beautiful, cheerful color. I wish more people would wear color, and people react to the color and they're not like looking at your boobs. You know, it's like, it's just like, find the things that are fun and joyful and make you happy, and just go there. And you don't have to address everything. Not everything needs to be fixed.
Right. Actually, absolutely. I talk about distraction also. Like, mm-hmm. You don't have to fix it, you know, or if you can't fix the size of your room, right? People talk to me all the time about, oh my God, this room is so small. Should we paint it white? No. A small room, bad light, dishwater gray, unintentionally gray walls. Embrace it. I mean, I know that's become really trite too, but I really believe in it.
But it is so much about perception. It's just like, we, you know, if you want to obsess about the smallness of the room, do it. But there's a bunch of other conversations to have.
I say distract with color.
Tell me something else about your kitchen.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. So, right. So you already talked about the second tenet, treat your kitchen as a room first. So practical.
Absolutely. Yeah. It is a kitchen that has function, but it also, like, you do so much more than cooking in that kitchen, I bet you. And so also think about addressing those needs. So a comfy, doesn't need to be an upholstered chair that's like British style, but I brought in two of my dining chairs, which are kind of comfy in this tiny cafe table. It's wedged in there. It's, you know, it's not perfect, but boy, now my kids eat breakfast while I make their lunch and cook. And previously they'd been in another room, you know, and that has changed my life. They're by a window. I have to move the chair to get in the lower cabinet to the recycling. Like, there is some awkwardness there, but hanging out with my kids for an extra 20 minutes is great. Like, yes, please.
More important. Yeah, right. Design with flexibility in mind and work around existing imperfections, right?
Yeah, and the flexibility is, like, if you are renovating, I do, like, I'm anti banquette. I don't love built-ins. I learned this from a designer, Lee Schwartz, a while back when I was working in an apartment in Queens, and she was just sort of like, once we build this in, like, there's no out, you know, you don't get to move something around. You don't get to change anything. You know, some houses call for it and they need the intimacy, and maybe you can drop the ceiling there or make it, you know, feel, you know, cozy. Houses come in all shapes and forms, but I would say that the trend that I see in renovation is so often about, making it bigger, raising the ceiling. It's a room that I love, so I want more of it. But the truth is that a lot of reason that we love the room is because of the intimacy of it. People gather in the kitchen, not because that's where food is, because that's where people are. And typically people want to be close to people. And when you add an island the size of an Escalade, you don't even get to like touch hands across the table. You can't even pass a dish. I see islands like that all the time. Like, that's crazy. You're cooking something in the kitchen. You can literally not, you have to slide it across this huge dance floor. It's so strange to me.
It's funny. I grew up in a 1965 suburban, New York suburban house. And we had, shortly after we moved in, my parents, room by room, when they could afford it, they did their renovations. And the kitchen that stands out to me over all the incarnations of the kitchen, somewhere in the 70s, the walls were wallpapered, combination of matte and shiny, white glossy background with yellow and black flowers.
Yeah.
And then we sat around a formica table with a black banquette with white piping around it. There were six people in my family. So, you know, slide all the kids in the banquette, whatever.
Wow.
I mean, it was what people were doing then, and it worked for a relatively big family. But I was surprised to see it come back so strongly, the banquette.
At my time at House Beautiful, I mean, I said that was like our Playboy centerfold. Like, banquettes were, we just absolutely dined off on that, and people couldn't get enough. And it's like, we did them on covers and you know, breakfast rooms. I will say, like, I understand the impulse for it, because there's intimacy in there and there's memories. It's like a diner, you know, like a little booth in a diner, or a bench back seat of a car, or a love seat, like these really, you know, these intimate spaces. Yeah. And like I said, for some houses, they're totally right, because they can add intimacy where there is none. If you're already in kind of a petite space, I honestly think a club chair does better. Like, you may end up just spending more time there by yourself, or reading, or enjoying a room that has a lot of work to do in it.
Yeah. Yeah. There were a lot of memorable quotes and ideas from different people. When I reread the book, I wrote down so many that I know I can't mention them all here. So I'm going to start with the biggest hits. I mean, the ones that really, really got me. Okay. Maybe because I read it first in the book, it ends up first on my list. And I laughed out loud. If your kitchen makes your heart sing, you don't need to hang a sign that says live, love, laugh. I laughed. I saw that immediately in my mind's eye were those stupid signs. I'm sorry if you have them, listeners. People hang in their kitchen or over their fireplaces that say exactly that. Because if you're living and you're loving and you're laughing, you don't need a sign to tell you that, right? I hate them.
Yeah. And I think it's also filed under like the impulse to buy a thing to have an experience. And I think that 9 times out of 10, it doesn't work. It has to be experience led. Design can help make experiences, but you can't reshape culture from scratch by buying stuff. You just can't tell your family to laugh more. You know, it's just like, try harder and do it in the ways that are human based, you know, spend time, just spend more time.
Yeah. Well said. Well said. Meta Coleman's client said they want their kitchen to be a workhorse and a show pony. I mean, that's so clever, isn't it?
It's brilliant. It's so brilliant. It's one of the best things I've heard. It's incredible.
Yeah, that's our hope. That's your hope. Liz McPhail said, some people read, some travel, some work out. I do house. It's never finished. That's me, baby. I don't know about you, but I tinker forever.
It's 100% me too. And I think of, like, I often think about Charlotte Moss, who is the ultimate tinkerer. And I remember this conversation with her, and I'd love to revisit it. Where she kind of explained maybe like a Saturday, Sunday morning at her house and like what she does. And it's just so beautiful. And I do it too, which is like, you kind of walk around the space and you take maybe one thing from a mantle and you remove it and you bring it to another table. Or, you know, it wasn't cleaning so much as like tinkering, or you're getting fresh flowers and you're putting a bunch in a vase, and maybe you have like a tulipier or like a little bud vase and you're adding a couple in those and you're adding them to a different part of the house, or you're readjusting a chair maybe to face somewhere else. But like, it's this, and you know, and Charlotte's, you know, style is legendary, and we sort of see it as static, right? It's like it gets photographed and you're like, oh, it's perfect, exactly the way it is. But no, she moves things all the time. You know, it's like, I think it's so important to say out loud, like, really, people that love and live well change things. They're not like there's one right answer. There's a lot of right ways, or there's a lot of good ways to do it. And so anyway, I love that idea of doing house.
Yeah.
And it's totally that. Sometimes it's mending broken things. I move the furniture constantly. I take up rugs when I'm like, ugh, just too much stuff. And I want to roll the rugs up and heave them in the closet where they're jammed in. There's no good place for, you know, storing a rug. But it opens up the space for a little bit. Or yeah, just have an active relationship with your house. I wrote about this a lot during the pandemic, because people were forced to live in their houses and work from home where they never had. And we were really, really actively touching our house for the first time. I remember talking, you know, to people that were like, I have never known where the sun crosses my living room, because I have gone to an office 5 days a week.
That's beautiful.
And on weekends, been out with friends, or people that were getting to know their houses for the first time in ways that they were like, whoa, you know, I didn't know my apartment was like this at a certain time. Or I, you know, and I would say, like, you know, everyone's like desk in the basement or desk, you know, tucked away in a bedroom. And it's like, yes, maybe that's where you knew the privacy when your kids were home, but maybe you're still working from home and it's time to bring that desk to the light. You know, it's just everyone works better near the light. And that's ultimately also what color tries to do, is manipulate light to either feel a certain way. And that doesn't have to be bright, airy. It can feel cosseted and cozy and warm. It can feel like, you know, a yellow can feel more like the lamp glow, right? It doesn't have to, you're not like, ooh, wow, what a great yellow. It's like, oh my gosh, this room just makes me feel so good, or it feels so cozy.
Right. What's the effect of it? What's the effect of the color more than what's the hue itself? I love that. I love that concept of coming downstairs and walking from room to room and tinkering, because it's really about seeing your environment. I mean, with so much we take for, of course, in our lives, we take for granted because there's other things to think about, worry about, experience, plan, blah, blah, blah. But start the day walking around, looking, seeing it, and seeing how you want to iterate it for that moment is fantastic. I love that.
It's so great. Honestly, Amy, like, there's some people that see things and they're very intimately, like, in tune with that. And there's other people that are pretty happy in, you know, their environment, or unhappy in their environment. And there's not going to be environmental changes. They're just not as sensitive to that. You know, there's people that smell things very acutely, and others that will, you know, that will never be kind of a function of how they experience life. And I believe that house is the same way. It doesn't mean we shouldn't, but it doesn't mean the same for all of us. And for those of us who care about it, it matters a lot.
Victoria Sass said, the best colors take more than 3 words to describe. Well, you might be surprised, as a colorist, that I'm a little bit more forgiving. I would say a minimum of 2. Like, never say I love blue, say I love dusty blue. If you could just give it one adjective with the noun, that really, really helps. But I love that she said that.
I love it. Yeah. That's a great one. And she also talked about colors fighting. Mm-hmm. This idea where, this is a little advanced, but obviously you know how to do this, where maybe you're taking the same tone of 2 colors and one of them becomes dusty, but the other one is more pure and anodyne, you know? And so it's this like push and pull. There's energy that's created from, let's say, let's take that like egg yolk yellow and a blue that has more of a gray blue, like a historic blue quality to it. Maybe in the day we would call this clashing. but there's also a way in, let's say the room is saturated in that blue and there's beautiful furnishings that are kind of like on the neutral side, adding a yellow lampshade is like an exclamation point in the room. You know, black does the same thing, like having this punch of something unexpected, and it doesn't have to be an equal. You're not doing a 50-50 room, right, of these two colors. But it's just, you know, like eyeliner we can use as an example of just highlighting this very, like this, you almost don't see it, but you feel it.
Right, right. Well, listen, you're talking my talk here. I mean, I spent way too much time on one episode of the podcast, which was about interior color, talking about power clashing. And my co-host had to like stop me, you know? And I was like, you know, the first person who I noticed did it a lot, and by no means is she the first person who did it, it's the first person I noticed who did it was Heidi Callier. She's a clashing maven. And she talks about the tension created by clashing colors. And I agree. And again, this is so personal for some people. You know, they would say one of two things. They don't go, or they don't match. I mean, my big thing is we don't talk match in my world. There's no matchy-matchy. You're never trying to match.
Yeah, and people have different thresholds. I mean, honestly, like, I really respect, some people just don't have it in them to be brave with color in their home. It doesn't make them feel good. It makes them feel ungood. And you know what? Totally valid. The best power clash I did, my friend Carl Loans, who's an editor here in Montreal and Toronto at Style at Home, and a longtime designer and a just smart guy. We were sitting at the breakfast table in the breakfast room of my old home, and I had lovingly shelled out for this incredible Venetian plaster treatment in a color very similar to Monticello Rose by Benjamin Moore, like a dusty pink, let's say. And it was very beautiful, and everything was coming together really nicely. And it was very pretty, and but to me, like, kind of soft. Like, I was like, oh, like, this is nice. Like, it didn't really carry an energy for me. And that room, you know, the kitchen, it's like I had kids underfoot, and what should I do? Maybe the inside, like, so the window wells, right? Like the inside of the window, not the molding on the outside, but the inside where you could sit. And in older houses are often deep, which is really lucky. But even the shallow ones work. And we had the Benjamin Moore like deck in front of us, as often we do. And he fanned it out. He said he found this color. I think it is actually called pea soup. It's definitely, split pea. Split pea is the name of it. And he was like, this is like the lemon zest for the room. Like, it's like the hit of acid. It's like the squeeze of lemon on a fishy pasta, or like lime shaved on a baked good, you know, like this, like that, like,
yeah, you need the acid.
Acid. I was like, we got the fat, we got the salt, right? Like, where's the acid here?
Right.
And I tested it, you know, because it was a bold move, and I tested it. And it was beautiful. And also the light comes in there, and the way light plays on color, like, it often just washes it out, right? When you have a gloss color, it's kind of washing over it. It doesn't heat it up, you know, it actually can wash it out. So you can be pretty bold in that. But the inside of the window wells is something. And now that I'm saying it, I'm like, ooh, where's the paintbrush? You know, like, what can I do today? Cause that's a pretty quick project with some painter's tape and, yeah.
Was it semi-gloss or was it matte?
It was. Yeah.
Really? I couldn't tell that from the pictures.
I did. And then the walls are quite, you know, they're actually like velvet. They're, you know, a matte Venetian plaster. So they're super. And that hit of gloss and matte is so classic. You can take the same color and gloss and matte and talk about chic. I mean, my God.
Yeah, absolutely.
So chic.
And this is in the room adjacent part of the kitchen that had the ox plug cabinets. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
Katie Rosenfeld, she said white cabinets need contrast or else it's a snooze fest. I totally agree. But I just want to mention also Katie's kitchen, which was very beautiful. She went for aesthetics over function. She gave up storage for the look of her house. As a person with a kitchen that's pretty small, all of my baking pans and things are in a giant Tupperware in the garage. When I saw she gave up storage, I was aghast, but she did, right?
She did a bunch of things that, you know, that are right for her. Right. Because that is how she's going to enjoy her kitchen. But she wanted the uppers gone. The kitchen is petite and those uppers feel like, you know, they can feel like rain clouds, storm clouds over your head, you know? And it's just, when you remove that and you have, when there's space at eye level, you gain so much extra. It really is like headspace, headroom, right? It opens up so much more than almost any other decision. And so that's why designers do it. That's why you see the uppers coming down. And that's why in a lot of older kitchens, you never saw uppers. It wasn't just the construction, but it just wasn't. Yeah.
James Coviello, unfitted kitchens are the most flexible. I just love them because I have such a love of that Duval kitchen. I can't help myself. I love those country kitchens. And I love when the parts don't all, they weren't built together. They weren't fit together.
Yeah. So what that means. And like, I write that, you know, in mid-century, we became like, you know, it became this bodysuit of a kitchen that like the whole, why does the blouse have to connect to the underwear? When was that a good idea? When has that ever been like, oh, I'm so glad that this blouse is connected to my underwear. Like kitchens became like where if you're going to touch one thing, you had to touch another thing. You had to touch all the things, right? Because the cabinets are fit to the counters are fit to the this, to the that. An unfitted kitchen is how kitchens used to be, which is that there was like, you know, a Hoosier cabinet that had your, you know, you stored your as a, it was a cupboard, you know, before the cupboards were mounted and there was a table instead of an island and there were, you know, chairs, not banquettes. And and there would be just a small table next to your range. These are parts, you know, it is unconventional. There are ways to almost kind of halfway it that are quite clever. And this is, you know, this is an elevated thought for people that are building and want to think about. In Europe, they're common because people move with their appliances. When you rent and own, you bring your stove with you. That is how that goes. And so that is why those British kitchens look all kind of quirky and like, you know, haphazard. It's like, well, yeah, this table was here and the previous owners left it. We brought the range because we spent on the range. And this was, you know, it's all a kind of a jumble.
Nat McBride said older kitchens are episodic and evolve over time. That's so sweet. True.
I love that. Nate McBride was an incredible interview and his contributions to the book are unbelievable. And his point was, as we age, so should our kitchens. As we evolve, so should they. And that doesn't mean that things just get old and chipped. It means that our needs are different. You know, there's some talk about bar stools in there. And I stand by the fact that like bar stools are great for people aged like 14 to 44. And they're really bad for everybody on either side of it.
Yeah.
It's, you know, older people can't get up and they feel uneasy getting up into a bar stool often. And kids can't. They fall off, they twist around, it's not fun and it's not cool. Like it's not an inclusive seating. It just isn't. If you're going to have over an older neighbor, you're not sitting at a bar stool.
Yeah.
Just a hard stop. And so anyway, I think about that as somebody that likes to host and somebody that likes to make people feel at home. And they should evolve with age in the way that you look at your needs and say, oh my gosh, we finally only have 14 to 44 year olds. Great. Let's do it. You know, for the next 20 years, the people that are going to be sitting around are that. And I want to do it that way. Or I like the way it looks and I want it. But the point is that there's just so many factors, you know, to take in. It's not just what resells, what have you seen in pictures? But there can be a lot of reasons to make the decision for function or for, I just like it. I just want it. I'm like, you know what? Then do it. Totally do it. If you've been thinking about this forever and fantasizing, I'm not going to stop you. It sounds great. you know?
Yeah. The book ends with a list of small additions to your kitchen to make it your own. They were all great. They were common sense. They weren't revolutionary. They were just think about it. Yeah, of course. I wrote down just a few of them because they were probably the ones that I employed. The small table lamp, a piece of art, a collection of vases on a ledge or a shelf, cookbooks, and dish towels. Well, I collect them. But there's so many more.
Thank you. First of all, Amy, I'm like such a fan of, I love the post. It's so funny because I talk about this all the time. We did a post about an exterior color and it was this beautiful, I think it was like a blue gray or a deeper color for a house. And the client wanted to keep the contrast of like white trim and the white downs, like the gutters and the downspouts. And I think like the number one thing I tell people all the time is like, no, paint it all. Like, don't, yeah. Like only, like if you have trim or a weird ceiling or a whatever, Like, just know that if something is color and then something is white, you're going to go look at the contrast between the two. It's the number one thing that is both kind of obvious, but essential to say out loud. I say it all the time to friends. I'm like,
yes,
I just think that you've handled it so beautifully in so many of your projects. And there's so many of these tiny little nudges that make this, like, you're already painting, you're already doing this thing. You can just make this tiny little iteration. And those are my favorite kind of design moves, which are basically just think with an open mind for a second, look at the images, read a book like mine or, you know, other ones that are addressing it from kind of an unconventional standpoint. And understand that minor adjustments can make big life changes. You know, it doesn't, I really am like, before you gut and before you just like spend the next 6 months of your life, you know, fighting with your spouse about it and spending all of your money and agonizing over decisions, like, and what could just be a minor adjustment that could bring, yeah, joy and levity into that room. And that's the kind of lens which I want. And that's, you know, ideally the book is just filled with that for people where they look and go, God, what a relief. I didn't realize that just doing this would be an option.
Absolutely, Sophie. I mean, just your description of what happened with your friend and painting the jams of your windows, right? That one, that big color in that small space changed the whole space. It changed kitchen. It was that eyeliner. It was that accent. I mean, I always tell my clients, yes, you like this blue. No, you don't like this blue. We'll talk about putting that blue on your walls. But remember, colors are perceived in combination only how yeah. they work together. It's the whole shebang.
Yeah. And in symphony with life. That's the other thing. It's like you make right. all these decisions. And like I said, like then people walk through and things are cooked and they smell a certain way and life goes on and you're not staring at a chip. You know, you're not staring at a color sample. You're not staring at the tile. It's all part of this big, beautiful working organism. So to just relax a little on that choice.
Absolutely. Thank you, Sophie. This was so much fun.
Thank you, Amy, so much. Everybody go buy the book or check out Instagram where I share, different tips on, kitchen and more. Kitchen and living, right?